Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It is EJ from Newark, Delaware.
My name is EJ Fornius, alcoholic. And thanks for asking me to come up here and speak. I know I'm supposed to say it's an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is the truth. Somewhat. But yeah, the reality of it is this is very, very difficult for me to do. I struggle with doing this. I don't want to do it. You know, I'm pretty good now. I've been doing it for about 4 or 5 years. And I'm at the point where I only really started getting nervous about the ride up. But I want to tell you about what my day was like today, because there's this whole process that goes on behind. I have to monitor my fluid intake very carefully because I don't want to get up here and have to, you know, run to the bathroom. But then I have to have the water here because I know I'm going to get parched. And it's just this whole big thing that goes on in my head every time I have to do this. You know, and I'm thinking like, oh, man, you know, they asked my girlfriend to speak at this meeting before I did. You know, I must be horrible. I don't even know why I'm doing it. It's just I'm nuts. And it's just a difficult, difficult thing for me to do. The ironic part about it is this is what I do for a living. You know, I'm a trial lawyer. I stand at a podium and talk to people for a living, you know. And I always say, like, it's just a little bit harder when I'm here because I got to tell the truth, you know. It's the reality of it. I suffer from alcoholism. And, you know, I think among other things, that's like a disease that affects my perception. And, you know, and I'll tell you, just like the other day, I had the perception that I can't do anything right. I'm a horrible member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hate my life. I hate my job. And I carried that on for a day. And then Friday morning, that was Thursday, Friday morning, I got up and I said, EJ, do you think it's possible, as I'm getting in the shower, I said, EJ, is it possible that maybe your life isn't that bad? You know, maybe you don't hate your job. Maybe you don't want to kill yourself. Maybe this is just your perception. And I said, yeah, okay, I'm good. And I had the best day. Like, that's how crazy I could get. And, like, it's never more personified than when I'm here. Because at 8:07 when I walked up here, I want to run off. But by 9 o'clock, I'm going to be on cloud 9. You know, that's how quickly this alcoholic's perception changes. And it's just always been like that for me. Dave said I'm not even sure where I'm from anymore. I have kind of two home groups. The first is the South College Speakers Group. That's in Newark, Delaware. It meets Wednesday night at 8:30. I'm sure some of you have been there. But I have, I guess what is my new home group is the Fairfax Speakers Meeting. It's a brand-new speaker meeting in Wilmington, Delaware. And that meets Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And if you're not familiar with the geography of Delaware, Wilmington and Newark are at best 15 minutes away from each other. And there's, like, a lot of good sobriety in Newcastle County, Delaware, in my opinion. There's a lot of people. There's, you know, from when I've seen other meeting lists, you know, there's just never like a tenth of the meetings that we have. We just have a ton of meetings. For, you know, it's just a random place like Newcastle County, Delaware. People don't even know that Delaware's a state half the time. You know, but we have all this recovery. But there's this thing, like, I'll say it like this. When I got sober, my the sponsor I met, he says, EJ, we're going to go to a meeting in Newark, Delaware. I said, that's insane, Sean. That is 15 minutes from here. And you live 15 minutes the other way. Like, why? Why would we possibly go to Newark, Delaware? And he said, shut up, get in the car. And I did. And I got to be honest, like, that was the best advice that guy ever gave me. He just told me to keep shutting up and get in the car. But what I'm trying to get at is, like, we had this wonderful, beautiful speakers meeting in Newark, Delaware, South College. And, you know, it's the meeting where I first had the message of hope carried to me. It's where I met all, you know, most of my good friends. Pardon me. It's where I got recovered. But then, you know, we have this other pocket up in Wilmington, Delaware. And I'd say to people, like, why don't you come check out the meeting? You'd love it. It's like at 8:30, EJ. You know, I don't want to drive. And it's just such a foreign concept to me because, like, I got sober and it was like Monday night in Philadelphia. Tuesday night we actually stayed local. Wednesday night we went to Newark. Thursday night we went to Baltimore. Friday night it was either Philly or York. And it was nothing. You know, driving up here took us about an hour and 15 minutes. Like, I don't even think about it. You know, that's just how I got sober. It's just different. But these people just, you know, refused to drive to our meeting. So we said, screw it. We'll bring a meeting, put it in their own backyard, you know. And it just blew my mind that this meeting we put in Wilmington, it's just blown up. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary. You know, we're getting like 100, 110 people every night. You know, it's just really, I mean, that quickly. After about 3 weeks, we had 100. And except for the fact that, like, we don't have air conditioning at the meeting, it obviously dropped off in August. But it's been solid. You know, it's been just a wonderful, wonderful thing that I now have these two, you know, 15 minutes away from each other. We have these two wonderful meetings where hope is carried. And, like, I believe that the message of hope, you know, I know it gets carried from this podium. I don't know about tonight, but I know I've been here before. I know it gets carried from this podium. You know, the message of hope is something that's so important. You know, and look, I'm going to be honest. You're going to get some of my opinions tonight. You can like it, not like it. That's just kind of the way it is. This is kind of how EJ sees it on October 25th, 2010. It's just how I see it. And, you know, that could change tomorrow, but this is what I got today. And I think that the reason that, you know, we try to carry hope from these podiums is because that's our common problem, you know, is the lack of hope. You know, I believe that we all have the same bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous, that lack of hope, hopelessness, you know. And a lot of people disagree, you know. They want to look at, you know, well, I never, you know, EJ walked into the rooms at 32. He'd never been to rehab, might be a little outpatient, never been to jail, never been homeless, never lost a job, never lost a girl that I recall or cared about. I just didn't lose a lot on the outside, you know. But I'm dying, if not dead, on the inside. You know, and see, my experience is for a long time, I tried to compare myself to what I heard in the rooms. And I heard a lot of people sharing about all those things I'd never done. You know, I don't relate to going to jail, you know, but, you know, I end up at the South College meeting. And I hear this guy talking about, you know, he hated himself and he wanted to die. I said, I felt like that, you know, and he talked about, like, you know, feeling alone. I felt like that. You know, not feeling like he had any friends, like he just never wanted to leave the house, you know, that he just couldn't stand his life, that the simplest, you know, chores and things that we do, you know, getting up, paying our bills, going to work, that these activities, you know, were extremely difficult. I related to that, you know, and I related to the one that really that sold me was this guy shared about looking at himself in the mirror and seeing like cold, dead eyes looking back at him. You know, and that was my experience when I showed up in AA. Every night I used to stumble into my bathroom, put two hands on the sink, and just, I don't even know why I did it. I just did it every night. And I looked back at myself, and I didn't recognize the guy. I certainly didn't like the guy looking back. You know, and when I heard this stuff, when I heard this guy talking about how he felt inside, I was hooked. You know, it was the first time that I said that maybe this thing's for me. Because I've been bouncing around AA for a couple of months, and I'm actually a court slipper. Yeah. My sponsor wasn't sure if he wanted to waste his time with me because he said, I even work with a lot of those court slippers. They never stay sober. But, you know, here I am. You know, it's, you know, that guy did what he could for me and I took it and ran, you know, and him and I used to joke about that court slipper comment. But I showed up hopeless and you all carried a message of hope to me. You know, because whether or not I knew it or whether or not I could articulate it at the moment, that's the only message, you know, that I'm going to hear. You know, I certainly didn't want to hear it, but it's the only message that speaks to my heart. You know, we talk about in the doctor's opinion, the message that can hold an interest in alcoholic must have depth and weight. And that, I think, is the only message, you know, in AA that has depth and weight is the message of hope. You know, this is how I felt. This is what I did. This is how I feel now. You know, and if God likes me tonight, then that's hopefully you're going to get a little bit of that if I don't get in the way, you know. But that's kind of like, that's opinion number one for me. It's like we have the same bottom, hopeless, you know. So I try to carry hope to the hopeless, you know, which just kind of makes sense. My sobriety date is April 29th, 2005, about 5.5 years sobriety. It blows me away, not because I think it's a long time, but just because it's something that I never thought I'd ever, ever, ever want. Never thought I'd ever be able to stand up and tell 100 other people, you know, I haven't had a drink in 5 years. Like, why would anybody want to say that, you know? You know, I'll tell you, the happiest anniversary I ever had in AA was 7 days, you know. And I also picked up my first resentment that day. Because I, long story short, you know, there was a girl that I knew from before, and she was sober in AA, and when I got my court slip, she kind of drugged me along. And my experience is I started working the steps on day three. And I certainly wasn't recovered. I certainly wasn't cured or any of that. But by day seven, I felt good. I felt happy. You know, I knew that there was something out there, something here for me. And, that girl called me, CJ, what are you doing tonight? I said, I'm going to go to this meeting, Green Hill, because I know they give out coins there. I want to get my 1 week coin. And my first resentment was when she told me that, like, we don't have them. There isn't a, like, 1 week coin in Delaware. Because to me, like, that was a big deal. You know, like, if you drank like I did, like, you would understand that, like, seven whole days, like, that, you know. I think we all think that way, you know. Like, if you drank like I did, you'd be amazed at what I've accomplished. But the truth is, I've accomplished nothing here. You know, I am not capable to stand up here and talk to you. I just don't have it in me. I'm not capable to help another alcoholic. I'm not capable to, you know, to stay sober on my own. I'm not capable of being a good employee, a good friend, or a good boyfriend. You know, I truly believe that. And that's because I have no power in my life, you know. And there might have been times before I got here where on an episodic basis, I was a good guy, you know. But throughout the stretch, I just don't have it in me, you know. And I had to come here and find some power. And I had to get tapped into the power of God. And with that power, you know, I can come up here and hopefully carry a message for another 42 minutes if I don't run off the stage and vomit first. But I'm able to do things because I have the power of God. You know, and that's really about what my experience is here tonight. You know, I'm here really to testify as to what my God has done for me. You know, and to let you know that's there for you too, you know. And I absolutely love my life, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous, who's given me the life I have today. That being said, you know, not every day is all rainbows and smiles. I mean, you know, I have bad days. You know, there's days, and sometimes the life affects me. Sometimes I screw it up. You know, I'm certainly not perfect. I'm certainly human. And there's plenty of times when I'm not the best AA around. I was thinking about this, actually, as I was sitting over there waiting for the meeting to speak. It seems like whenever I get asked to speak, like, I'm going through something. And I had to speak, like, last week. I'm speaking tonight. I got to speak in 2 weeks. I got, like, five of these things lined up in, like, 2 months. And I'm going, man, what is wrong? There's clearly got to be something so grievously wrong with me. Because I've got all these, like, speaking engagements, like, one on top of the other. I just haven't figured it out yet. But, you know, the cool thing about AA is that it showed me how to be a person, showed me how to be a man, showed me how to be, you know, just a good functioning member of society. And that's, you know, a lesson that my parents tried to teach me, my teachers tried to teach me. You know, I ended up going to like 17 years of Catholic school. I'm from Havertown, Pennsylvania. I went to a Catholic grade school, a Catholic high school, 5 years of a Catholic college. The only other person I've met in AA that's went to more Catholic schooling than me went to the seminary. So I have to believe that somewhere in that 17 years, there was like a religious person that tried to talk to me about God. I have to believe that. You know, I have to. Do I remember it? No. Did it take? Clearly not. You know, and it's not because of anything those people did. It's because I just didn't want to hear it. You know, think about it, man. We don't hear what we don't want to hear. It's not until my ears and my eyes are open, you know, to the possibility of a God that I can hear anything about a God. But, you know, that's my experience, man. I was raised a good Catholic, and I think back, you know, somewhere in the book it says, deep down inside every man and woman is a fundamental notion of a belief in God or something like that, you know. And I think about it. I remember when I was like 7 or 8 years old, we used to have these things called like the May processions in our school, and it was, you know, to like the Blessed Mother, and we would sing and march and blah, 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 reading. And like, I remember I just used to feel so good and so excited about this stuff. You know, but as the malady that's inside this alcoholic grew and I got older, you know, that desire to feel good while celebrating my faith, you know, became consumed by the ego, you know, by self, by fear, to the extent that, like, it was unbearable to think of spending 45 minutes in a church on Sunday. I just could not do it. I had no time for it. My life was so important that I did not have 45 minutes for God. And I say that because usually Mass is an hour, but the way we do it, our way, you know, you're in late and out after communion. That's just how we did it. But and that was too much. You know, not even sitting for the whole thing was too much. That was too much for me. I got kind of a late start, I guess, in terms of my drinking. I was about 17 years old. And, you know, it was just some of my buddies, and we went drinking because all the cool kids at my private high school were doing it. And they were all I went to this private high school, Devon Prep, like all these guys. There was like 26 of us that I graduated with. 23 of us were rich. And then there was the three of us from Havertown, Pennsylvania. We were not rich. We were poor, but I think we were the only ones that did not get a brand new Jeep Cherokee on our 16th birthday. You know, and I don't, it is what it is, but, you know, I say that because I come into that school and I have a little chip on my shoulder, and I instantly, I remember the first day of that school, I milled around in the lobby and said, man, I made a mistake. I should have went to my local high school because I knew some people there. I don't know a soul here. All these people are clearly better than me. I got to figure out something to try to fit in. And after about 3 years of going to that school, I said, man, those cool kids, they're drinking on the weekends. I got to see what that's all about. And, you know, I did it. We did what most people did. We stole the liquor from our parents, and nothing happened. You know, nothing happened. I always used to question whether I was a real alcoholic because I'd be like, you know, it just didn't do anything for me the first time. I didn't have that thought of, like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I had fun, you know. And I'll be honest, like, for a while, I had fun drinking. You know, that's it is what it is, you know. And I went to college, and let me put it like this. Our book says that, you know, lack of power, that's our dilemma. And I get that. You know, when I was home, you know, through high school, like a year and a half of high school, like I had parents' power in my life. I couldn't get out of control because I lived with my parents. And it just, that was some power over me doing what I wanted to do. But the minute I moved to college, I went from a kid that drank, you know, 3 days a month to a guy that drank 6 or 7 days a week like that. You know, and I never understood why. I just said, this is, you know, I'm being a college kid. That's what we do. You know, but as I sit back and I think about it a couple of years later, like, I had no power. You know, there was no parents' power. That was the only power I had in my life. I certainly have no power, you know. And think about it, like, isn't our life really a search for power? You know, I know it was for me, you know, whether or not I knew it, but I was always looking for that thing that was going to make me feel right and feel like I belonged. And I believe that today that that's a search for power. You know, as a kid, like, I would collect things like the comic books, the baseball cards, then it was the girls, then it was my car, then it was, like, working out, then it was not working out. And it was just, it was one thing after the other. Like, I would do these things, and they were great. And then one day, I was like, I'm done. What's next? You know, and that thing just no longer held any power for me. And I think that, like, all the powers of this world just work like that. You know, every single thing I could think of, and I found alcohol, and I found drugs, and that stuff worked. You know, and it worked for a really, really long time, and it worked better than anything else I'd ever found. But it too stopped. You know, so yeah. When I get to AA, and they got to tell me, and my sponsor tells me I got to find some power, and it can't be a worldly power. Like, I get it. You know, I get it. Because he asked me straight up, like, is there anything you think will make you happy? You know, and I said, I got nothing, Sean. You know, and I asked him a couple weeks after. I said, what would you have said if I said, yeah, I got an idea? You know, I would have told you to go try it and then come back for the steps. You know, because I had to utterly fail at every other single power before I was open to the possibility of God power. You know, that's my experience. But, you know, I get to college and I'm just, you know, I'm out of control. I'm having fun. I thought it was completely normal to stick your finger down your throat 3 or 4 nights a week. It's just what I did, you know. And after that first year, I got sick in the summer. And I went to a doctor, and he told me that I had, like, this liver disease. And I didn't believe him. So I made him bring in his partner and re-diagnose me, because I thought my mom had put him up to it. You know, it's confirmed. Now EJ is going back for his second year of college, you know, and he has, you've just taken away the thing that makes me feel like I belong, the thing that connects me to my friends, you know. I got nothing. You know, and by the time, you know, at that point in my life, like, there was lines I'd never cross. You know, I said, I will never, ever, ever take a drug, ever. I won't do it. Scumbags do that stuff. But here I am, back in college, no solution. Who do you think was the first person I called? You know, the guy that could get me those things. I crossed that line without even thinking, because I needed a solution, you know. And that's the way it was. College was like that. I showed up at that school on full scholarship. 4 years later, I can't graduate because I don't have the credits. You know, I had to go another year. And ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to grow up and be a lawyer, a trial lawyer. And, you know, here I am. Like, I can barely get into a law school. You know, I actually applied to the lowest rated law school in the country. Like, that was my safety school. I said, man, they got to take me. They take everybody. And that way, like, my dream wasn't totally thrown away. I just could not have bared the thought of, like, applying to, like, the schools that I wanted to go to, like Temple, Villanova, and not getting in. It was too much for me to handle. So I ended up getting into Widener Law. That was the best school I got into. And here I am off to a place called Delaware that I'd driven through once or twice. And I'll be honest, like, law school was a power in my life that worked, you know. I did not drink like I did, and things just did not get bad. That liver problem got a little bit better, you know, to the point where that doctor said, EJ, your liver's getting better. That's probably what he said. That's not obviously what I heard. I heard you can drink again. So now I'm drinking, and I got those other things going on, too. And, it got bad, you know. But then that law school's power. So here I am. I graduate law school. And now I got, you know, I got a little bit of money. I got a job, you know, and I'm like, this is it. You know, all the pieces are in place. You know, I'm gonna live the dream, you know. And I'll tell you, I lived the dream. I lived the dream for a couple of years. And I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous 32 years old living the dream. And see, that's just how bad my picker, how broken my picker is, you know. I have no clue. I have no clue on what to do. I truly got everything I ever wanted in life. I showed up miserable, hopeless at the doorstep of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, that's where my dreams and hopes get me. You know, they get me here. I don't know a single person that ever said, like, I want to grow up and be sober in AA. When I get older, you know, when I get to be an adult, I want to sponsor guys and speak at speaker meetings. You know, that was not my plan, you know. My plan was to be, you know, filthy rich trial lawyer driving a Porsche or something like that. But, you know, whatever. And so, yeah, I get out and I'm practicing law and things are pretty good. And I got that liver's feeling pretty good. And I'm drinking and I'm partying. And you know, I got to be honest. Like, I live with my parents. I have no bills but like an $80 a month cell phone bill. I make pretty decent money and I'm just blowing it left and right. I'm doing whatever I want and taking in whatever I want. And I'm having a blast. You know, and I realize that I'm working in Delaware and I'm still commuting back to Pennsylvania, that this is kind of a bit ridiculous. Like, I know it's a bad idea to drink and drive. I'm not going to not do it. But it would just be better if I moved to Delaware. So it kind of made sense. Like, the bar's closed. I had this whole thing. Like, the bar's closed an hour earlier. Yeah, I can get there an hour earlier. You know, I can go home. I just had it all, like, mapped out so I could still get, like, 8 hours sleep, sober up, and get into work. And I got to be honest. Like, within 7 days of moving to Delaware, I stopped going to those bars, you know, because I didn't need the bars anymore. I just didn't have a place to do what I want. Like, it wasn't – I realize now that it wasn't the party or the fun or any of that stuff. Like, I drink for effect, you know. Alcohol gives me something that I don't have without it, you know. And what alcohol does for me is it solves all my problems, you know. I can't deal with life. I can't live. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I just have no clue, no direction. And alcohol worked, you know. And, like, when I'm working with a new guy, like, that's, excuse my choice of words, but it's, like, a tough concept to sell somebody on sometimes. You know, that alcohol wasn't your problem, it's your solution. Like, I keep butting my head sometimes with these guys. You know, but that's the way I see it, and I don't necessarily have to be right, but, like, I see the way I drank is I wanted the effect that was produced, you know. When I drank, you know, you take a guy that's, like, shy and nerdy and fat and you know, not funny and can't talk to women, my booze erases all of that. You know, I'll be the first one cracking jokes. You know, I think I look like Brad Pitt and I dance like John Travolta, and I'm going to walk right up to you and talk. Like, that's – alcohol made me a better person, you know. And I used to come home and I used to have this kitchen table and I'd, like, get my mail and I'd just pile it up and the bills would come in and I just – like, it was all I could do to pick up a pen and write a check, you know. And I just couldn't do it. And you get me drunk, man, I said, I'm writing the checks out. I'll write this one for next month. I can do simple things, you know. Alcohol was my solution. I truly believe it was never my problem. You know, I like the effect produced. And I started paying prices. You know, one of the most embarrassing days of my life was the day I showed up in court, not as a lawyer, but as a defendant. And I actually had to hire a guy I went to law school with to represent me. And he said, you know, Mr. Fornius here, Your Honor, is a... It was in the Jersey Municipal Court, and it's like one of these, you know, it's like this, I'm sure somebody in this room has been to court before. The judge is just kind of filling out the paperwork, not even looking up. And he says, Your Honor, Mr. Fornius here is a member of the bar in good standing in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. And this guy just, like, paused. And he just looked at me and shook his head in disgust. Like, yeah, that lawyer's coming before me. It hit me. It's like, you know what, you're just not on the right path. It was that judge that ordered me to a class, and that class that ordered me to Alcoholics Anonymous. So here I showed up, 32 years old, 350 pounds, no license, having to get his paper signed, a shell of a man, you know, just completely worthless and dead inside. Could not even look at myself, you know, in the mirror without being terrified. You know, that's what showed up at your doorsteps. And I'll tell you that, I got to be honest, like, that's not the man that stands before you today. You know, and I owe that to the power of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I truly do. So I came around for about, my recollection is a little off, but I think it was about 2 months. You know, I was getting that paper signed. I was signing on my own for a while. Yeah. But I'd be like, there has to be a guy named John at the Wilmington group, you know. It's like, how are they going to check it? It's anonymous. I finally show up, and oddly enough, I looked at your list, and Nick from Jersey is going to be here in 2 weeks, right? He's the first guy that ever stuck his hand out to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could not get away from him faster. I could not get, get away, dude. But what happened was that girl that I was friends with, she called up a bunch of the guys she know and said, yo, my buddy's coming in, get him. And he did. He walked right up to me, and I had no idea what he said, but I remember that incident. I remember checking out his shoes I'll never forget what that guy did for me, even though he never sponsored me, but is a friend of mine today. In any event, I wasn't there yet. I just needed that last, like, push. You know, I was hopeless, but not quite ready. So I'm going to these meetings. I end up at this meeting on a Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning, this is like a big meeting in a small room. And they have, kind of like you almost have here, like there was like an overflow into the other room. And I showed up late, of course, so I'm now in the overflow room, and then the five other people in the overflow room decide to have their own, let's shut the door and we'll have our own little meeting in here. So I'm like, God damn. So I'm watching the clock. I'm doing the math calculation. And I realize, like, I got to say something. Like, there's no getting out of it, man. It's like 60 minutes and six guys. Like, I'm going to have to say something. And I have no idea what I said. I remember that I cried, and I remember that I asked for help. And I also remember that that meeting ended. I walked outside, stood on the corner, still, like, kind of wiping back the tears. And nobody talked to me. It blew me away. And my friend sponsor was one of the six guys in the room. You know, and I had met him before I even got sober and thought, you know, why wouldn't this guy talk to me? You know, he knows what he's doing. He should be talking to me. And then I realized, like, you know what, man? That's how EJ wanted it. That ain't how God wanted it. Because 2 days later, I met the guy that I believe, you know, God used to save my life. You know, and I tell that experience not because, you know, I think what that guy did was right or that I hold a resentment. But I don't want that ever to happen on my watch. You know, that's how powerful that experience was. It hurt, man. It hurt to be the guy crying and nobody comes up to. And that's, I got to be honest, like, that doesn't happen in my home group. I guarantee that doesn't happen here either. You know, there are enough people that will not, you know, not, if you even look funny, we're going to get you. You know, you're going to be talking. And I might chase you out the door even quicker. But, you know, we just, you know, we know. I met my buddy Sean, my first sponsor, two nights later. And this guy was, he's a rough guy, looked nothing like me, tattooed up all over the place, everywhere with the tattoos. I think he might have been like, but a blue collar guy, I'm a white collar guy, he had no license. I think I got my license back, he had no car, I had a car. You know, on the outside, you would have chosen my life. But on the inside, like, there was no comparison. You know, I heard this guy sharing in the meeting about, like, being homeless and going to jail and eating out of a dumpster and trying to hang himself from a ceiling fan. I said, my God, this is a shame, this poor guy. And he comes out and he's looking me in the eyes and he's happy and he wants to know what he can do to help me. And that caught my attention. Like, hearing this guy's story, saying, what has he got that I don't have? Clearly, I got much better stuff. I rolled up in a Lexus. You know, this guy had to get a ride here. You know, like, how could he have some? I just, it just didn't make sense to me. So he said, you know, he gave me his number, said, call me tomorrow. And I agreed that I would. I agreed that I would read that doctor's opinion. And I went home and got hammer drunk, and I read the doctor's opinion. I wasn't a liar in that particular. Anyway, I didn't understand. I didn't understand a thing about it. But I'm going to tell you, like, Sean and I got to work. He told me that I was dying. I was dying from untreated alcoholism, which left untreated would kill me because it's fatal. And that scared me, you know. And he didn't tell me that to scare me. He just wanted to, you know, kind of hit me with the truth about my condition. And I was hopeless, and he carried that message of hope to me, you know. And my life changed, you know, and I hope that it changed. You know, it's certainly changed for good. What a ride it's been, you know. I don't know. I don't want to go through all the steps, you know, per se. But I'll tell you about my favorite step, which is step three. And I think of it like this, man. Like the best way. I was talking to a guy last night, and I said, Rob, you and I have been down this road before. You've heard what I'm going to say like 100 times. I'm going to get kind of like bullet points to get through. And if I could like sum up step three. It's like, I work for God. You know, I work for God today. You know, he is my employer. That's my favorite, like, part of that particular step. The reason I think step three to me is so important is it says, somebody correct me if I get this wrong, but it's the keystone in the new and triumphant arch to which we pass to freedom. And I asked a buddy of mine, who I said, actually a mason, I said, Ronnie, what's a keystone? He said, EJ, that's the thing at the top that holds it all together. I said, huh. If this step holds it all together, you know, that which is on one side of it and that which is on the other side, it's pretty damn important, you know. And, you know, because that third step tells me what my problem is. You know, it's until I had that conversation with my sponsor, I thought my problem was the booze. I thought my problem was those other things I did. I said, it's you. Selfish. Self-centeredness. And therefore, we think that our troubles are of our own making, you know. And I didn't want to believe that. That was like a tough pill to swallow that, like, yeah, certainly reinforced by my fourth and fifth step that, like, I didn't want to see that I was the problem, that I was to blame. Like, I had, like, a weird experience with the fifth step and the fourth step. I never met anybody, and if you're here tonight, please come talk to me and tell me, that wanted to do a fifth step. I could not wait to come home, write, and then drive up to his house and talk to him about it. I just thought he was going to be so damn impressed with the stuff that, like, I had to show it to them, you know. And like I said, never met anybody that, like, that had that experience. They'll make me special or unique. Just putting it out there because I want to find somebody that's like me, you know. But that's the truth. Is I could not wait to get it done. You know, I met up with that guy in a couple of days, and he talked about 1, 2, 3, showed me how to write a fourth, and I went home. And the first weekend after he showed me how to do it, I did it. You know, took me about 3 hours. I didn't have much going on a Saturday. You know, I didn't know what to do. I was a couple days sober. I had no idea what to do. So I got to writing, you know. And you know, he was like a really active member of AA. And, like, it would drive me nuts that he had, like, other guys he was helping. And, you know, showing, like, I'm done. I'm on the way up to your house. No, you're not. You're not. You got to wait, cuz. And I did. You know, I was patient. And when he had time for me, he gave it to me, you know. And he had time for his other guys. He gave it to them, too. And I just kind of had to wait my turn. And that's okay, you know, because I was willing. And I'll never forget, after I went through my fifth step with him, I don't remember how long it took, but he said, EJ, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's the thing I remember from that night. I remember driving home from his house feeling lighter, feeling freer, you know. Just my buddy Ryan describes, like, the feeling of, like, a spring being in your chest, you know, and the more I do, it just gets twisted and twisted and twisted and twisted. You know, through that fifth step, we just kind of bling, that's, you know, and it's not, there's nothing there, and I'm light and I'm free, you know. And man, my heart was filled with hope that night, you know, and my perception changed in that instant. You know, I then began to think, what is my role in this particular situation? What could I do differently? What did I do that contributed? You know, and you know, that kind of I began to put on like that new pair of glasses. The world around me took on like a new perception, you know. And ultimately what those steps did for me was they gave me purpose and direction in my life, you know. And the world as I see it today is nothing like the world before I got sober and before I worked these 12 steps. You know, my world, you know, like the sum total of anything I cared about was an arm's length, you know. And today, like, I am just so open, you know, to other people and other ideas and different concepts and whatever. You know, it's just blown me away. Yeah, but I love the fifth step. You know, I thought I was such a badass that I had to, like, impress this guy. Who by this time I thought was pretty cool. And, like, there was, like, one thing on my fifth step that he was impressed about. That he had to, like, what is that? Oh, okay. So that was, like, the consolation. I don't know. I got kind of a cool nine-step story, too. I'm going to tell you that one. And then my girlfriend told me to make sure you talk about what it's like today. Because I think that's important. And I think a lot of times when I speak and when other people, like, you know, we get through the steps and, like, that's it. And we don't spend any time talking about what our life is like today. So I'm going to do my best to do that. But here's my, you know, by the time I get to my nine step, like, I'm rocking and rolling. Like, I am all in with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm about a month sober. I remember I was out in Las Vegas 5 weeks sober at a wedding. I made an amends out there. 5 weeks sober in the place in this world that has every single thing I want, you know, within walking distance. And look, my experience is I did not want to drink. Let me say that again. Like, I didn't fight the temptation. I wasn't white-knuckling it in that city. I did not want to drink. I am in the place that has every single thing I want, and I didn't want any of it. You know? That's how powerful this thing is. But I'm rocking and rolling. I'm making amends. I hit my parents and my friends. And you know, you're getting, oh, EJ, keep doing what you're doing. We're so happy to see you. Just keep it up. And I run into my sister. And she says, I said, Stacy, can I talk to you for a second? I think I called her up to, like, schedule an appointment or something to meet with her. She says, is it about that AA stuff? I said, yeah. No. She says, I don't want to talk to you about that stuff. Well, maybe you didn't hear. Maybe you didn't get the memo. But, like, I'm sober now, so it's all good. And, like, to be honest, like, I was pissed. And I asked her, like, three or four more times, and I just didn't know what to do. Like, what? Let me tell you, I tortured this poor girl. As long as she's been alive. I mean, literally. I was horrible. I was the single most... And she used to come to my anniversaries and she'd make sure you tell the part about where you were horrible to me. You know, it's like, simply put, I was worse to her than any other person on this planet, that I, in my opinion. And she didn't want to hear it. You know, so I had a new sponsor at the time. He says, EJ, forget about it. Go be a good brother. You know, show up for that girl. You know, do stuff for her. Try to be a good brother. And I did. And I never brought it up to her again. But, you know, there was times when things would be rough and she'd pick up the phone and call me. You know, and about 2 years ago, she asked me to be in her wedding party. And my relationship with her, I was at her, you know, I had to watch that damn Phillies game at Saturday night at her house, which was cool, except for the game. But, you know, like, that's, I have a sister that's my friend today, simply put, you know, that without me even making that approach to her, just changing my behavior, trying to, that relationship got fixed. And to me, that's the, you know, that's the better part of it. It's not so much what I say to make that approach, but it's, you know, look, I'm going to say it like this. I had the legal dictionary out one day because I had to look up what the word amend means, because I thought it meant to, like, change or, you know, to make different. It actually, in the legal dictionary, it said to improve, you know, to make a change for the better, you know, amends. And that makes sense to me today. You know, I have to change this, I can change it for the worse, but if I'm making the amends, it's going to be better for me having done this. And I'm here to report that my relationship with my sister is much better today. All right, here's my other amends story. You ever have, like when you write your list and your sponsor says, well, if you're not willing to do that one, just kind of leave it there. Maybe you'll work up the willingness. So here goes. I'm a thief. You know, I steal. I stole from my employer. I used to have clients that would pay in cash. I would take that cash, put it in my pocket. They would have no idea. I would have never been caught. And that's the backstory. And here goes the story is, I put that on my list, and I said to my sponsor, Danny, I will be just fine never making that amends. And I was for about a year and a half. I was just fine. And, you know, I'll be honest, like I'm not an angel in sobriety. And, me and some of the people, you know, in my home group, we started like playing cards to have fun. And then a couple of us, it got pretty sick. Like we were just spending a lot of money gambling and it got bad. And I think that this has something to do with why I ended up making this amends, because it had to do with money, because I don't see any other connection. But I started having money problems. And I'm praying, like, God, what do I do? Like, how do I, you know, it's just driving me crazy. And, like, at work one day, I get this flash. You need to make this amends. I don't get the connection, but this is what comes to me. Is EJ, make the amends. And I realize that, like, I have about a minute to do this, or else it's going to fade, you know. And in that minute, I process the fact that I don't have a wife or a kid. I can lose my job, and nobody else is going to get hurt. You know, I don't think I get to do this amends, maybe, if I have anybody that's financially dependent upon me. But in that moment, I processed losing my job. And it was, I could care less, because I had to be free of this thing in that moment. I had to be free that I could have cared less what happened. So I ran down to my boss and I said, Bill, I need to talk to you. And I told him what I did. And I told him about how much I thought I'd stolen from him. And I told him I'd like to try to repay it this way and kind of waited. This man stood up, stuck out his hand, shook my hand and said, this will not affect our relationship a bit. It took a real man to come in here and tell me this, you know. And let me tell you, that guy, and I tried and I did my best to pay him back. That man promoted me, gave me raises, gave me days off. Our relationship was never affected by me telling this guy I've stolen thousands of dollars from you. And the best part about it is, like, a year later, I came to that same man and said, Bill, you know, I've got wreckage in my past, and I got to be honest, like, I love you, and I love this place, and I don't want to ever leave, but I got this job offer that's going to pay me a lot of money. And he says, can you give me a day, EJ? I said, sure. And the next morning, the minute I parked my butt in the chair, he's on the intercom, get down here. And him and his other partner says, we want to make you our partner, you know? Here's our credit card. Spend it wisely. Why do I tell you this? Is it important that I became a partner at a law firm? No, it's not important at all. But I think it's really important to tell you that, you know, with the power of God, that this is how relationships get mended. You know, they took an employee that stole and turned him into a man that they didn't want to leave. You know, I think that's pretty powerful. You know. And it has absolutely nothing to do with me, because all I did was follow directions, try to do my best to do what these steps tell me, you know, do my best, you know, do what my sponsor told me and what I thought God was telling me. And the life I have today is, you know, like I said, man, I love it. Every day is not Christmas, but it's pretty good, man. I wouldn't trade the life I have. So what is it like for me today? I'm still a partner in that same firm. I got a wonderful girlfriend who is, you know, she's about... coming up on 2 years sober now, even though she spoke here first. Did I mention that before? I can't see her. She's giving me the evil eye. I'm getting the evil eye. I believe in the 12th step. There's a promise. I don't know if any of us think of it as a promise, but it says a fellowship will grow up around you. It tells me not only like nothing will so much ensure my immunity from alcohol is intensive work with other alcoholics, but it gives us the promise that if you do that, a fellowship will grow up around you. And that is my experience today. I'm certainly not the best AA. There's plenty of days I show up and like, hey man, there's a new guy. Why don't you go talk to him? Cause I don't feel like doing it, you know? And I'm human, but like over the whole, like by sticking my hand out, I've met friends, you know, and I've been able to sponsor guys. And some of those guys are my best friends today, you know. Guys that would lay down their life and do anything for me, you know. And I got a girlfriend that's, you know, she's doing the same thing. She sticks out her hand, you know, and she's got a fellowship growing up around her, you know. And for a while I thought it was like, here's the fellowship. Let me plop myself in. And I don't see it that way today. You know, I see as I come into this fellowship, and if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, another one's going to grow up around me. You know, there's going to be new people that are going to come in. And, you know, I've watched it, man. I've watched, like, my home group take off from, like, 30-some people when I got there, and I don't mean to say this anything to do with me other than I just happened to be there, but the guys that were there and the girls that were there, you know, tried to pass this thing on. You know, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it spawned another home group, you know. And look at this group. I'm sure there wasn't, 100 people the first night. Maybe there was. But that's the way this thing works. You know, when we get out there and pass it on, like, this thing grows into this beautiful, beautiful fellowship. I guess the thing, like, when I first got here and I looked at the steps on the wall, I got like, ugh. That really, God, that's it? That's what you're pushing here? I was kind of disappointed. In my experience, like, I said, like, I'm going to do these steps. Like, this guy seems to know what he's doing. But, like, some little part of me said, I'm going to give this, like, some little part, it ain't going to work. So let me give it my all. It'll fail. And I'll never have to come back here again. But, like, the operative part of what I just said is, I gave it my all. And despite the fact I did not want it to work, assumed that it would not work, it still worked. Because I gave it my all. I gave it everything I had. Because I wanted one shot at AA, then I'm done. I'm never coming back. That's how powerful this thing. That's how powerful God is. You know? And I don't know, man. I just absolutely love my life. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe it's my obligation to get out there and to pass this thing on, you know. And it's not something that's nice if I do it. It's not something that would be cool if I got around to it. You know, I really see it as an obligation. It's our obligation to get out there and pass this thing on, you know. Because that guy that sponsored me, Sean, like, he didn't stay sober, you know. And he was about 3 months sober when he found me. And you know what? I still to this day don't know if he was sober when he was taking me through 10, 11, and 12. You know? Do I recommend that for everybody? No. But I say that just to say that, like, God can use any of us, no matter what condition we're in, no matter how spiritually unfit I may be, no matter how spiritually fit I am, you know, God can still use me if I make myself available. You know, and my job today is really not to get out there and sponsor the world. It's to be available to sponsor the world, you know. And I find that, like, I stray from AA, you know, and my perception gets all screwed up again. And I got all this work to do. And you know, I got to scale back the meetings and crank out the work. And I'll do that for a week or two. And I feel like I've got more work to do than when I started. I'm further away from God. And then until one night, I just think, screw it. I'm going to go back to AA. And usually within a day or two, my perception changes that all that work that was piling over my desk, it ain't so bad. You know? And that's kind of the thing, like, I've really learned about myself. Is like, I don't think many of my problems are real. I think they're just my perception, you know. And my dad and I, we have these like political debates, and he says, EJ, perception is your reality. And I said, no, you know, nothing could be further than the truth for me. I said, there is the objective reality, and there's my perception. And you know, what's real is real. I could see it this way today and the completely opposite tomorrow. You know, and I just don't take myself too seriously. You know, and it's like the whole, like, the ironic part about this thing is, like, this is life or death for me. You know, and for a lot of you, this is life or death, too. But I try not to take it too seriously. You know, how does that coexist? Right? I mean, how does that coexist? Like, life or death? Right, it works. You know, you tell that to somebody, and they say, oh, what the hell are you talking about? But, like, it makes perfect sense to us. So I'm starting to ramble, so I'm just going to shut up and say thank you for having me up here. Thank you.